And we're back here on Unusual Sources, 93.3 CFMU FM, broadcasting live from McMaster University in Hamilton. Of course, it's our fundraiser week. So again, if you want the kind of coverage like what you're just about to get with Kevin Skerritt from Canada Haiti Action Network, just remind you, you can call us at 905-528-9888. Maybe you haven't donated yet, or maybe you know a friend who might want to help out with our program. You can give us a call, 905-528-9888, bringing you news from Haiti all the way to Hamilton, what the steel workers are doing, what unions are doing. Next week, there's other programming coming up on a similar basis. And of course, our discussion about what happened with Israel Apartheid Week. It all happens here. We give you the news. We give you the community programming. Anyway, we should have on the line with us activist from Ottawa Haiti Solidarity Committee and Canada Haiti Action Network, Kevin Skerritt. Kevin, can you hear me?
Yes, hello.
Ah, great. I can hear you. Thanks, Kevin. Yes, again, Kevin is a favorite guest of our program. He is a member of the Canada Haiti Action Network. He's been commenting on Canada's affairs in Haiti, Canada's relations to Haiti, for several years now on our program. And Kevin, you spoke with Peter a few weeks ago about the provision of aid. Is that right?
That's correct. It was, 3 or 4 weeks ago now.
That's right. Yeah, it was a good interview, but we got cut short. We didn't have a lot of time, but we have a little bit of time today, so we can delve into some of those issues. We really liked what you had to say, and we wanted to make sure our listeners had a chance to hear about it. And I guess one of the things you were looking at as an activist and a researcher is the way our media in Canada in particular was looking at how we were helping, so to speak, the people in Haiti after the disaster. And you had mentioned that you had seen some emails from newsrooms that were asking journalists to seek out examples of fundraising, grassroots fundraising. People, in ordinary Canadians, you know, at a coffee shop putting out cash jars to raise money for Haiti, or you know, school kids, how school kids can contribute as part of their school activities to Haiti. And there's journalists in other newsrooms that are looking for stories about how Canadians are helping Haiti. So, you know, it kind of seems to me that the journalists have already made up their mind, right? It's that we're helping Haiti, and the question is, how do we get stories about Canadians doing that? Do you see like a framing process in the media here?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And the reason that I kind of reacted a little to the email you mentioned is because, in fact, unfortunately, what I've seen in my time watching Canada's role in Haiti over the last 6 years and the way the media has operated, it has been, in fact, very consistent. We have a situation where this country has been in repeated crises and really dire humanitarian situations of grave human rights abuses, serious violence, often with our own government intricately mixed up in what's happening and sometimes directly responsible for what's happening. And unfortunately, we have a media narrative which continues to frame, as you put it, Canada's role in the country as purely one of generosity and of giving, and somehow this situation where we have a lot of Haitian victims of Canadian policy, somehow the media figures out a way to tell the story as, in fact, a situation where Canadians, whether in government, in non-government organizations, or in this most recent round, in this most recent crisis after the earthquake, Canadians are presented as the heroes of the story. Here we have this outpouring of Canadian generosity, and what we saw, just to mention specifically, in this email was, and I won't name the specific individual, but we saw an email that went out to reporters in one of the major networks urging them to find examples of grassroots fundraising efforts in order to tell the story of this Canadian generosity. And, you know, I guess I had a mixed reaction, because on the one hand, we all, I think, appropriately are impressed, and rightly so, with what is really a genuine response of authentic generosity, and people really do see these horrible images of suffering and the impact of the earthquake in Haiti, and people want to contribute, and that's an important story. But unfortunately, the way the media operates, it tends to prioritize certain aspects of this story, and then, of course, decontextualize what is really vital ingredients of this story, including recent history, recent political and economic history, where, in fact, Canada's role has not been one of endless generosity.
Yes, I guess there's a lot you could omit and not tell just by not giving the information, by not telling the story. And one of those things, I mean, we've talked on the program before about Canadian intervention in Haiti and what we've done, so it's not necessary to belabor the point, but one of the things we did do was we destroyed the Haitian state's capacity for disaster response because, you know, there was, under the Aristide government, under the pre-coup government, they had been developing disaster response plans, and I believe those were eliminated and shelved under the coup government that followed.
That's exactly right. And my colleague here in Ottawa, Jean Saint-Ville, who is also involved in Canada-Haiti Action Network and involved as a leader of the Haitian community here in Ottawa and nationally, one of the points that he made immediately after the overthrow of the Haitian government in 2004 is that this didn't just, you know, get rid of President Aristide, which, you know, we've talked about before and I think people are familiar with. This was a devastating blow to the capacity of the Haitian government, because it was in fact the entire government that fell. The parliament was dissolved, everybody was replaced, and it was an enormous setback because, as you point out, up until that point, this very poor, under-resourced government had been struggling to try to build its capacity in a number of areas, and they ranged from, you know, basic social service delivery to infrastructure development to HIV/AIDS crisis response to disaster response, as you rightly point out. And those efforts, a very significant portion of them, were smashed in the overthrow of that government. And they ended up putting in place, in a crisis period, an unelected government that was backed and financed by Canada and the U.S. and to some extent France. For 2 years, and that government spent more of its time imposing its will and its control over the population rather than building that capacity that had been attempted previously. So this is really important background information from the not distant past that I think more Canadians need to know about and understand to really understand why it is that this country, you know, was so incapacitated in January of 2010 when the earthquake struck.
Yes, you know, one of the ways in which Canada was becoming involved prior to the coup and prior to the earthquake was the provision of aid through smaller non-governmental organizations. So little building projects scattered throughout the country, and that money was not going into the Haitian state or the capacity to have large-scale medical care or disaster relief or anything like that. So in a sense, we're seeing the results of that. But how does this play out after the earthquake? If you have a situation where we're funding small-scale and sometimes larger-scale aid organizations, but not helping the Haitian government itself, how does that play out once the disaster strikes?
Well, this is a terrific question, and I think it really is. If we had a responsible mainstream media, there'd be a lot more focus on exactly this, because, you know, what we had, as you say, was a situation where the supposed development assistance that Canada, the United States, and other governments were providing ended up being channeled through non-government organizations, also religious organizations, sometimes with missionary-type mandates, and all this proliferation of tiny micro-projects, uncoordinated, unregulated, dangerous in certain circumstances, really a complete mess. And this, in the name of development, was actually underdeveloping the Haitian state so that it actually didn't have capacity to deliver and meet the needs of the population. So, as you say, turning to what does that mean for now and for today? Well, we have a decapacitated, incapacitated state apparatus, which itself was damaged and set back by the earthquake. So the question you're asking is crucial. So how does it go forward? How do we go forward? My concern, and I think that's shared among many people in the Haitian community here and in Haiti, and those of us that have been following critically Canadian policy, is that what we're actually seeing in the wake of the earthquake is a kind of a reengineering of control mechanisms over the country that in fact reproduce and replicate some of the worst examples of crisis response that we've seen in recent history, including the example of Hurricane Katrina, where in fact powerful economic interests, corporations, and certain national governments get directly involved in a process where there's opportunity for profiteering and so forth, and the central actor, the central agent that ought to be leading, directing, coordinating, planning the process, which is, of course, the Haitian state, which is supposedly representing the population of the country, has actually been sidelined. And instead, you have this sort of consortium effect of the United Nations and Bill Clinton and national governments like that of the U.S. and Canada and some others, all forming this kind of almost a kind of economic coalition that is setting out the planning for, you know, Haiti's economic development. I'll mention one thing in particular that certainly caught my attention and that of many others. There was an article that appeared a few weeks ago on the Associated Press Network that reported some staggering facts about the way that U.S. Development assistance dollars break down in terms of how it's actually distributed. And it reported that for every dollar of U.S., United States-sourced development assistance, less than one penny of that dollar goes, in fact, directly to the government of Haiti. And that's not the Aristide government. That's the government today, the government of Haiti that is supposedly being backed and supported by the U.S. and Canada and other international players. Well, I have no idea, when you have such a low GDP economy and such a limited capacity, how we could expect any government that receives so little of the overall pie that they're going to play a role. And of course, what that means is they're not. They can't and they won't. And that's part of the intention. Well, and so my concern, I mean, I would just say I'd be very interested to know how that same breakdown would happen with Canadian development assistance dollars and what the plan is, because I'm afraid that, and my concern, and it's widely shared, is that while there's a lot of lip service being paid to Haitian leadership and Haitian respecting Haitian sovereignty, the post-earthquake reconstruction process is going to be, in fact, exactly the opposite of respect for Haitian sovereignty. It's going to be something that is essentially designed and imposed by international players that do not have the interests of the population at heart.
Yes, shades of that whole disaster capitalism narrative you're giving us too. You know
exactly.
Yeah, I'm thinking here. One of the reasons why governments often say they don't want to give aid directly to the Haitian government or other governments in the developing or underdeveloped world is that the governments might be corrupt, and you know they're going to take some of that money. And it's just ironic because I was reading a letter to the editor in the Toronto Star the other day, which suggested that 2 to 10% of aid money given to aid organizations to Haiti, you know, gets siphoned off to the aid organizations, and it's listed as maintenance costs or overhead or whatever. So it's acceptable for there to be money lost in the provision of aid or services through an aid organization, through NGOs, in a way that we would not accept in a government.
That's exactly right. And I mean, it's the whole theme, I mean, it sort of merits its own separate treatment, but the whole theme and discussion about what is called corruption, especially as it pertains to poor countries, and I would say especially as it pertains to poor countries that are populated by non-white peoples, people of color, and in particular African peoples, this is something that is very much needing some inquiry, because in fact there are no measures, I don't think, that are universally agreed upon about what is corruption and how do we measure the incidence of what's called corruption. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, you know, some of the horrifying scandals, the financial scandals that we've seen in recent years in Canada and the United States, where we have, you know, Bernie Madoff, making away with $50 billion of people's money. Well, I mean, this is corruption, you know, and it interrelates with the corruption of the financial system in the United States. And yet somehow we would never imagine that the government of the United States or that of Canada, where we have similar kind of misdeeds and you know, financial criminality going on all the time and reported on in our media, but somehow we still preserve this idea that, you know, North America is free of corruption and a government like that of Haiti is a nest of criminals and corrupt thugs. I mean, these are sort of caricatures that are easily deployed behind certain interests.
Well, after what we saw in the bailouts, I mean, it's impossible to say that there's not corruption, I think. You can even see it in Michael Moore's latest film, where he looked at, lobbying influence and, you know, money going to politicians, that sort of thing.
This is exactly right.
Well, this is great getting this perspective from you. Again, this is not the sort of thing you'd get in other news. And I know in the past you've told us about just the difficulty in the actual provision of aid when the United States soldiers were on the ground in Haiti. There was limitations as to what was actually getting to Haitians. And this is all very interesting. So if people want to get more information about this, is there a website that you can recommend first and foremost?
There is, and I would just encourage your listeners to check out the website that we work on as Canada Haiti Action Network. It's very simple. It's CanadaHaitiAction.ca. This is a website where it actually is active. We update and provide material, late-breaking news, interesting articles, and also reports on what we are doing as a network on that website. And I'll just mention in passing that our network, which still has active chapters in 7 or 8 different cities across Canada, we've just posted a statement on the sort of the crisis, the post-earthquake crisis in Haiti, and that statement sort of issues a number of calls for really how Canadian policy ought to be reoriented if we are really going to see sort of genuine support, genuine development assistance, and a genuine respect for Haitian sovereignty as widely agreed is needed, but the kinds of things that we would like to see happen in Canadian policy.
So at CanadaHaitiAction.ca, they can get this very recently released statement.
That's right.
Okay, well, thanks so much, Kevin. I appreciate you taking the time to be with us today.
Okay, Brandon, best of luck.
Thanks, you too. Bye-bye.